Hostile? Verde said. He looked around. Would they?
You've had the rumors coming from the south, Galen said. Maybe the situation has worsened, and Avalon is desperate.
How desperate? Verde asked. What exactly could they do?
Who knows, but one thing is clear, Lysnam said. The White Mages are definitely up to something. They always travel alone, but Master Abbott arrived with two people in tow, one of them wearing an illusion. They never ask for help of any sort, and he comes here wanting to go through our library. They always mask their true intentions, but he speaks openly of his order trying to take over the world. He shook his head. None of it makes any sense, but there has to be some meaning behind it.
The fact he's arrived here now, a week before the Queen's birthday celebration, can't be a coincidence, Verde pointed out.
Obviously, Lysnam agreed. He looked each of his friends in the eye. We all know the Whites want to push us aside. I've no idea what their scheme might be, but whatever it is, we'll deal with it. This city belongs to us, and we're not going anywhere.
What do you mean she's still in love with you? Alice shouted loud enough to draw stares from people on both sides of the street.
Well, it turns out I'm a genius, and I accidentally discovered the recipe for permanent love potion. Oh, and that reminds me, we'll need to pick up some onions. I need tears, lots of them. Try and imagine me with other women, men too, if that helps.
Alice let out a low growl. No way am I helping you make more love potion.
Belle put a hand on her shoulder.
Easy now, sweetie. Can't blame Master for being so irresistible. I mean, even without love potion, he is adorable.
Belle winked at him.
Though with a couple scars and maybe losing an ear, no woman would leave you be.
I'd like to avoid getting mangled if I can. Belle pouted.
Such a waste.
Alice shrugged off Belle's hand.
How can she still be in love with you after all this time? You told me you weren't sure the potion would work at all. You also said it wouldn't last for more than one night.
That's how long standard love potion lasts. When I made my version, I didn't expect it to work as well. How could I know it was so brilliant?
Well, I am not helping you make any more. Do you hear me? I'm never shedding another tear again. You have me. Aren't I enough for you? Just how many women do you need? Wait, you think I want to make more love potion for myself? You think I'm happy about a white mage being in love with me?
A shudder ran through him.
Believe me, the last thing I want is to have more women obsessed with me.
Then why do you want to make more? Alice asked.
Are you kidding? I have the power to make someone fall completely in love with another person for the rest of their lives, regardless of how that person feels about or treats them. What could possibly be more evil than that?
Alice blinked at him several times.
I'll think about it. So, what happens now, Master?
Belle asked.
Well, it seems I won't be getting any help from the guild, but there's one other place where I might be able to gather information.
Where's that, darling?
Alice asked.
The Drow have an embassy here. They're well known for having eyes and ears all across the Shattered Lands, and even among the monster realms of Ostrogard. With any luck, I might be able to make a deal with them.
Alice came to an immediate halt.
Drow? The Dark Elves? But they're murderous beasts. Everyone says they're savages.
That's right, Waldo nodded excitedly.
Now come on and pick up your feet. Hopefully they'll be more helpful than the guild was. And there's no way they can be as scary as being alone with Melissa.
Waldo kept walking.
Come on, sweetie.
Belle waved a hand as she walked past.
Don't want to be left behind, do you?
But the Drow are monsters.
So are we.
She hesitated, but eventually hurried and caught up with them. On the street, two figures followed them. Chapter 10 The House of Black Glass. Waldo asked some of the local shopkeepers and soon got directions to the Drow Embassy. It was in the north quarter of the Gold City, which put it about as far away from the Great Market and the Guild as possible, while still being inside the wall.
Darling, you've had some bad ideas, but this has to be the absolute worst. They'll probably murder us and turn our skulls into drinking cups.
The Drow actually see that as a huge honor, They would never drink from the skull of a person they didn't respect.
Alice's jaw dropped. Stop and think about what you just said. You still want to go and meet these people?
Just because you put the body parts of your enemies to good use doesn't make you uncivilized. In Alteroth, we make wands from the bones of mages. Does that make us savages?
Alice shuddered. Darling, do you really want me to answer that?
Waldo gave a weary shake of his head.
You don't appreciate how hard it is to earn a genuinely fearsome reputation. Anyone can burn down a few villages, kill some prisoners, take some slaves. It takes real dedication to make entire nations afraid. In Alteroth, we admire the drow and their commitment to maintaining exacting standards of brutality and cruelty. They have a rare commitment to the craft.
So, it's a good thing they're so horrible, Alice asked.
Waldo nodded.
You should always respect creativity and a strong work ethic.
Is there a special reason you want to meet them, Master? Belle asked. Or are we just going to have tea and talk about different torture techniques?
With the guild being so obstinate, they're the only ones who might know where I can find a dragon's lair. That kind of information is very hard to come by. If there's any chance to find out where a dragon is, I can't pass it up.
Will you tell them who you really are? Alice asked. I don't think drow are ever friendly, but it has to be even worse for a white mage. If they know the truth, that might be better for you.
Waldo shook his head. You don't share secrets with the drow, at least not willingly. I'm sure it's not as bad as you think. The fact they have an embassy here proves they're willing to deal with humans, and they must know what the consequences of killing a white mage could be. It should be safe for me to negotiate with them.
Waldo paused.
Probably.
Probably?
Well, they are drow.
Waldo shrugged.
I have a really, really bad feeling about this, Alice muttered.
The drow had an evil reputation. They lived in hidden underground cities, with each being an independent nation. They were famous for magic, fighting skills, and cruelty, not necessarily in that order. The mere rumor of a drow raiding party was enough to send whole countries into a panic. Fortunately, they were too few in number to be more than a nuisance. The passages that led from the surface to a drow city were rare and difficult to reach. In Alteroth, only House Blooddrinker had regular interactions with drow. The relationship was sometimes fractious. Corpses from both sides would turn up now and again, but it was also profitable enough to make Blooddrinker the second richest house. His mother had always wanted to negotiate a deal with the drow to break the Blooddrinker monopoly. Unfortunately, all the agents she sent wound up disappearing. Waldo had only ever seen one drow before, and poor Nator Varal hadn't been in a very good state. Years ago, in Castle Corpselover, Waldo had been brought to one of the torture cells on the second sublevel. Lying on a table was a prisoner whose arms and legs had been hacked off, the stumps burned to keep him from bleeding to death. His mother was seated at a smaller table, filleting the severed limbs to remove the bones. Those were the best ones for making wands. His mother spared him a quick glance.
Your healing magic has been coming along very nicely, my son. I want you to try and regrow his limbs.
That's advanced casting, he'd answered. I might not be able to.
You are stronger than you think, Mother assured him. And the best way to learn is by doing. Even if you fail in the first attempt, you can keep practicing as long as you need. Nator Varal won't be going anywhere.
Hearing his name, the helpless drow turned his face towards Waldo. His nose and both ears had been chopped off. His left eye socket was empty. The sight didn't bother Waldo. He'd seen much worse.
Please, kill me, he rasped.
Waldo couldn't keep from feeling a little twinge of sympathy. Enver had torn Narya apart right in front of him just a couple of days before. He'd really liked Narya. She'd baked the best cookies. He understood why torture was necessary sometimes, but couldn't bring himself to enjoy the suffering of others. There was nothing he could do for this person, as there'd been nothing he could do to save Narya. If he even showed any sort of discomfort, Mother would be disappointed in him. The drow's plea had been loud enough for his mother to hear. She snorted a laugh as she wiped clean a thigh bone.
Unesi fundo, esi nigi zukungi fundisa kukala.
The prisoner sobbed and turned his face away. Waldo looked over at his mother.
I told him he has many more lessons to teach me.
Waldo nodded. He put his hands on the stump of the left leg and began to recite a regeneration spell. The moment he laid eyes on the embassy, he knew what it was. There was no mistaking it for anything else. To begin with, there was no illusion cast on it. Just as with his own people, the drow didn't bother with such superficial nonsense. No, the reality was more than impressive enough. The embassy was a spire, reaching 40 or 50 feet into the air and narrowing down to a point. The entire surface was covered in jagged spurs that would cut anyone stupid enough to try and climb it into pieces. There were no windows or balconies to be seen. The only opening was the main entrance. The entire building was made of obsidian, or what mundanes like to call black glass. One of the shopkeepers he'd asked for directions had told him that the drow hadn't built their embassy, that they had used magic to create it in one day. Waldo didn't doubt for a moment that was true. To make something like this in a single day would have required some very powerful and very advanced earth magic. This was a proper use of mana. It was 100 times more impressive than a fake tower reaching up into false clouds, being circled by imaginary eagles. 2 female guards stood to either side of the entrance. Their skins were as black as raven's feathers, and their eyes were a light red. They had steel helms and armor made of thin strips of metal. The taller one had an oval shield on one arm, and a spear with a barbed tip. The much shorter guard had no shield. Instead, a pair of sabers hung in her belt. Even from all the way across the street, Waldo could sense enchantments on every weapon and piece of armor. Unlike the royal guards whose equipment was made for show, theirs was made for killing. What drew Waldo's interest was one of the sabers. It wasn't made of enchanted steel, like the other weapons or like Rabbit Slayer. Instead, it glistened and shined like polished silver. He knew the metal had to be mithril, a substance lighter than iron, but harder than the strongest steel. Veins of the ore were exceedingly rare and only found deep underground. Only the drow and dwarven races were known to have access to it. His mother had a vault filled to overflowing with gold and silver, but there was not a single ounce of mithril to be found anywhere in Altar. Even the blood drinkers could not acquire any. Mithril was worth 1,000 times its weight in gold, but neither drow nor dwarves were willing to sell it at any price. The fact a mere guard was equipped with such a precious weapon spoke of almost unimaginable wealth. Both guards, looking directly at him, their expressions empty. Through the bond he could sense real fear from Alice. Even Belle was a bit nervous. While slightly afraid himself, Waldo was mainly excited. It would be interesting to meet drow with all their limbs and not constantly pleading for death.
"Darling," Alice whispered urgently, "are you absolutely sure this is a good idea?"
"No, but I think odds are 9 in 10 will survive."
"You think there's a 1 in 10 chance they'll murder us?"
"Don't be a pessimist, Alice. Given the reputation, those are excellent odds. But just in case, try not to eat or drink anything unless you see me do it first. Also, don't let anyone stand directly behind you."
He began to cross the street. A worried look passed between Alice and Belle, but they were right behind him. When Waldo came within 5 yards, both drow guards casually held their weapons out. The taller one lowered her spear, so the tip was aimed at his throat. The other had both sabers in her hands and her feet spread wide.
"What do you want?"
the short one asked. Waldo stopped, held both hands out, palms up, and spoke in a language neither Alice nor Belle understood.
"Ingikela, ababukeline holiwako."
Both drow appeared startled. They looked at one another and whispered back and forth. As this was going on, Alice hurriedly spoke in his ear.
"What did you just say?"
"I asked for a meeting with the ambassador,"
Waldo whispered back.
"Were you talking drow?"
Waldo lifted an eyebrow. "Obviously. Would you expect me to speak dwarven?" The taller guard entered the building. The other one remained where she was.
"Wait. We will see if the exalted lady wishes to speak with you."
"Ungoku kini sekile,"
Waldo said. About 1/4 hour later, the door opened again. 4 armed guards trooped out, all of them holding weapons in hand.
Come with us, one of them said. The exalted lady will meet with you.
Alice looked nervously at all the swords and spears.
Darling?
Imangalasayo, Waldo replied, and then spoke to the two of them. Come along. He entered the building without hesitation. Alice and Belle shared a resigned look. The tall drow with the spear remained outside. The other four escorted them in.
Waldo noted that the entire building did indeed appear to be made of obsidian. The floors, walls, and ceilings were all smoothly polished. As they walked through wide corridors, he saw no one else. No servants or other guards crossed their path. They went at a brisk pace, two guards leading them, two trailing. He noted the one with the mithril saber was among the pair walking in front. She kept turning her head and was keeping an especially close eye on him. The guards never holstered their weapons. Waldo could sense fear verging on blind panic from Alice and worry from Belle. He could understand why. Waldo didn't know if this would end well, but the chance to get information about a dragon was worth the risk. He needed to at least know a general area to search, otherwise his quest would be like trying to find an honest poison dagger. They were led to a pair of heavy bronze doors. Two of the guards opened them as the others herded Waldo and company inside. The four guards filed in and shut the doors. Wordlessly, they took places along the wall. The room was a massive chamber with five other doors. More interestingly, there were fruit trees and flower beds. Sections of the floor had been cut out and filled in with soil. There were six small trees. Each had ripe fruit hanging from the branches. Lemons, apples, pears, and figs. Along with the trees were a dozen beds with various combinations of flowers sprouting out of them. There was so much foliage, it almost felt like walking into a garden. It was not quite what Waldo had expected from the inner sanctum of a drow fortress. In between the trees and flowers was a long, polished wooden table with nine intricately carved chairs. Seated at the head of the table was a drow female. She was different from the guards in many ways. The woman wore no armor or weapons. Instead, she was in a backless pink and white dress that fit snugly and stopped well above the knees, revealing smooth, shapely legs and feet in red leather sandals. Unlike the others, her hair was not cut short enough to fit beneath a helmet, but flowed freely all the way down her back. Like them, her hair and skin were as dark as starless night, and her eyes tinted red as blood. Waldo thought she looked amused. He could sense quite a lot of magic from her, far more than he had from Lysnum or any of the guild mages. She was an archmage, at the very least. He would not be surprised if she was a master, or even a grandmaster. If she was the one who created this building in a day, she had to be of master rank. Without prompting, Waldo stepped forward and held out both hands, palms up.
Ukunibonga ukuba. Ingi hambise alangane nawe, ohinchusa elongi fikile.
Honored am I to be granted this meeting, exalted lady. A slight smile touched her lips.
Kaikinisoke, ukuluma ngolimi hlethu. It is true, then, you speak our language.
Waldo nodded.
Ingi kuluma ingeze limi, ezi isi kombisa, ungathula imfundo, ungokufelele.
I speak seven languages. I received a thorough education.
Kodwa ingabe ufunde kanjani? Engamashumi amabili kulomusi esake akeho, umuntu uye wabusu ukufundiswa kona. Ukthui loku umabedla kuso, singazi aifundise izinlanga ezikane. But how did you learn it? In my 20 years in this city, no one has ever asked to be taught it. Not that it would matter if they did. We do not teach it to the lesser races. Umasa wangi fundisa.
My mother taught me. Her eyes widened.
Ingabe eti umama wakukuyinto? Isikumba saku ufafathekile, kulo begotu. Are you claiming your mother is drow? Your skin is too pale and pink.
Waldo shook his head.
Luth non esse.
Not at all.
Quabe un unyoko funde indela lululimi. Then how did your mother learn our tongue?
Iba yesi kobo yesi boshwa, abalesa uhide okungo kwabe wake.
Akabanga umfundisi omhulika kulu.
Ungo kwesi bonelo. Ingazi itzin lela esi yesi tupfa, etzalu kene ukuthi,
Sikela siyeke, ingyanin senga ngawe!
From a prisoner who attacked a caravan that belonged to her, he proved an excellent teacher. For instance, I know 6 different ways to say,
Please stop, I beg of you!
The drow ambassador put her head back and laughed. As she did so, Waldo felt more confusion from Alice and Belle. When the ambassador finally stopped laughing, she put a single hand in the air and made a circular motion. 3 of the guards immediately filed out of the room. The one who remained, the one with the mithril sword, took a spot a couple feet behind her leader's seat and sheathed her swords.
What is your name, white mage?
She spoke in the human tongue. I am Master Waldo Rabbit of Avalon. She remained seated and held out both hands with her palms up.
I am the exalted Lady Valeria Ugaru Nostoth Ukarasu, of the great city of Ixendiliarto, shining gem of the closed world.
Waldo hesitated.
Could you repeat your name just once more for me, exalted lady?
She grinned and waved a hand to the chair nearest her.
The humans simply use exalted Lady Valeria. I welcome you into my home, Master Waldo.
Thank you, exalted lady. Waldo sat down. Valeria had not shown any interest in Alice or Belle, who remained standing.
You were surprised by the trees. The humans who come here always are.
I will admit it was not what I expected.
Perhaps you imagined a wall of skulls? The skins of my enemies used as tapestries. Would you prefer that?
Either is fine with me. As a guest, it would be rude to complain about the decor. Valeria chuckled and then snapped her fingers twice. A pair of human girls in white shifts entered from one of the far doors and hurriedly brought in trays and brought them over.
Will you introduce me to your servants?
She sent a slow and deliberate gaze to the two of them. Waldo waved them over. Certainly. This is my wife, Alice Rabbit, and this is my bodyguard, Belle of Tarsus. Alice performed a curtsy, while Belle waved a hand. Valeria did not invite them to sit. One of the human girls put down a bowl filled with fresh strawberries. The other placed 2 goblets made of wrought gold in front of each of them. The second girl filled both with a mahogany brown liquid from a kettle. Steam rose from both cups. There was an odor that reminded Waldo of damp earth. Valeria picked hers up and took a long sip.
Mushroom tea, one of my favorite drinks. I have to have the mushrooms sent here from home. They won't grow properly on the surface.
Waldo did not reach for his cup.
Please have some, Master Rabbit. It's very soothing.
Thank you, but no, exalted lady.
She stared at him over her goblet.
Are you afraid it's poisoned?
The thought had crossed my mind.
Through the bond, Waldo felt sudden shock from Alice and amusement from Belle. Valeria took another sip.
Many would take those words as an insult.
I agree many humans would, Waldo said. But a drow wouldn't.
I'm sure you see it as a compliment. Valeria nodded.
True, visiting for the first time it is considered customary to decline all food and drink. You have learned quite a bit about my people, though not everything.
She pointed to Belle.
For instance, entering another's home with an illusion is considered rude.
Waldo paused. I was told that it was customary in this city not to tamper with such spells.
It is, but you are a guest in my home now. Disguises are not permitted. Please remove the illusion.
Waldo licked his lips. Revealing Belle's true form was dangerous, but insulting a drowned noblewoman was much more so.
Nunc.
The image of Belle wavered and vanished, replaced by an 8-foot-tall ogre. The guard gave a gasp, then sent the ogre a curious look. Valeria's eyes widened slightly, and she took another deliberate sip of tea.
A great monster? You asked to meet with me, know my language, and have an ogre in your service. You are nothing like any other white mage I've ever heard of.
You're not the first to say so.
Do you know, one of your sort came here a few days ago. She stood in the streets just across from my front door and spent the entire day shouting about how corrupt and wicked we are. She spent the full day, from sunrise until sunset, yelling that we were abominations and should be dragged into the street and killed.
Her name is Melissa Cornwall, and that does sound like something she would do. She's a fanatic.
Until today I believed all white mages were.
I don't blame you. We are a crazy bunch. Did you know we are out to take over the world?
Valeria chuckled. Does your friend know you are here? Or that you keep a pet ogre?
As a matter of fact, Melissa does know about Gronk. I didn't tell her I was coming here.
We're not friends.
At most, I suppose we could be called associates. We have very different outlooks and goals.
Is that so?
Valeria took a plump strawberry and held it between thumb and forefinger.
The surface world is so rich, not in gold or iron or mithril, but in everything else. You have food everywhere, slaves beyond counting, whole lakes filled with clean water, forests teeming with wood, cloth, parchment, and so many other luxuries. In the closed world, everything but stone and minerals are scarce. Getting enough to survive is always a struggle.
She popped the strawberry into her mouth and took her time devouring it.
Such a shame there aren't enough of us to conquer the open world. If you humans only outnumbered us 10 to 1, we would take it all and enslave your entire race. If you outnumbered us 100 to 1, we would carve out vast kingdoms. Sadly, it is closer to 10,000 to 1. It is a pity.
From your point of view, I'm sure it is, exalted lady.
Valeria nodded and selected another strawberry. So, why does a white mage visit the embassy of Ixendeliarto?
It is said the drow have spy networks and connections throughout not only the Shattered Lands, but Ostrogard as well.
Is that what they say?
She popped in a strawberry and chewed. I need information.
Valeria swallowed. About what?
Dragons.
Dragons? She paused and slowly shook her head. You are full of surprises, aren't you? I assumed you wanted to know about some lord or king. Why would a white mage care about dragons?
I have my reasons. The grin flattened out and her eyes narrowed.
That's not a very friendly answer. How are we supposed to trust each other if you won't tell me why you want to find out about dragons?
We aren't going to trust each other. Trust is a dagger pointed at your own heart. The hand reaching for another strawberry suddenly stopped and her eyes widened.
What?
Waldo frowned. Had he said something offensive by mistake?
I simply mean trust is a very dangerous thing. Surely you wouldn't ask it of someone you've only just met.
Valeria folded her arms in front of her.
No, of course not. But how can we help each other if there is no trust?
Your presence in this city means you conduct business here. The merchants deal with you. Do you trust them?
I trust them to do what is in their own best interest.
Waldo nodded. Exactly. We can trust each other that far. We can make a trade. I want information on a dragon's lair, and I'm willing to pay for it.
And how would you pay me for such valuable knowledge? Dragons are notoriously difficult creatures to track. If I knew where one could be found, that information would be incredibly precious. What could you possibly give me that would be a fair exchange?
I have quite a bit of gold. A half-muffled groan came from Alice. Waldo didn't care. They could always steal more later. This might be his one and only opportunity to learn where he could find a dragon. Valeria snorted a laugh and tapped her goblet with a single finger.
Does it look like I need gold?
Waldo sighed. I suppose not. Would you be interested in the recipe for a permanent love potion? She quirked an eyebrow.
That does sound interesting, but it wouldn't be close to enough.
Waldo thought about the different spells in his spellbook. None of them were earth elemental magic. The most advanced spells were in air magic and in healing. Even if she had talents in those schools, he didn't think all the contents of his spellbook would be sufficient.
"Is there something I can do for you in return?" Waldo asked. "I am a white mage, after all."
She leaned slowly back into her chair.
Perhaps. Tell me, Master Waldo, do you know the Queen will be celebrating her birthday in a week's time?
I've heard it mentioned once or twice.
In the evening there will be a feast, and before that a tournament held in her honor. Gladiatorial combat, with all matches being to the death, of course.
Of course, Waldo agreed. What would be the point otherwise?
Most white mages feel it's criminal for men to kill each other for entertainment.
I think we've already established most other white mages are idiots. She chuckled.
Non-humans are permitted to fight in the arena. The tournament is supposed to be proof of human courage and fighting skill. Though monsters are banned, the guild doesn't bother to screen for them. You could enter your ogre with the appearance of a human servant. Competitors are even permitted to use their own weapons and gear, so he could fight with his magical sword. If your ogre wins the tournament, I will reveal the location of a dragon's lair to you.
That's all? Waldo asked excitedly. If Gronk wins this little tournament, you'll give me the information. Valeria nodded.
Yes, that's right.
Waldo jumped to his feet and held one hand out, palm up.
Done! Wait a minute!
Alice shouted. Waldo and Valeria both looked at her.
All these fights are to the death, right?
Yes, Waldo said. What other sort of gladiatorial fights are there?
So, the only person who lives is the final winner?
Alice asked.
Every other person who fights has to die?
That's right, Waldo said. Is there a point?
You know, Valeria said. I was under the impression that in human society it was the males who are dominant.
That's a common misconception, Waldo told her.
I see.
My point is, Alice continued, are you really going to put Gronk's life in danger just to find out where a dragon is? How can you be sure she really knows where to find one?
You doubt me?
Valeria asked in a soft voice.
No, she doesn't, Waldo jumped in. She absolutely does not. Isn't that right, Alice?
Something about the way Valeria was looking at her made Alice pale.
No, I don't. I was just making a point.
I see.
Valeria snapped her fingers. The two human servants jumped to her side. She whispered something to one and the girl ran out the chamber.
Perhaps I can do something to set your mind at ease.
Alice swallowed and turned back to her husband.
Darling, are you really going to put Gronk in danger like this?
I appreciate the thought, sweetie, but it's fine. In fact, it sounds like fun,
the ogre said.
Alice, what danger will he be in? He's an ogre, and he'll be fighting one-on-one against human warriors. They don't stand a chance. What if he has to fight a knight with a magical sword?
Well, there's a chance he might have to fight someone dangerous, Waldo admitted, but it's a chance I'm willing to take.
So, Gronk's life is less important than a mark on a map?
Alice, I have to find a dragon's egg. You know why. This isn't something I can just ask around about. A dragon's lair is almost impossible to find. I have to do whatever I need to find one. Gronk stepped forward.
Look, sweetie, it really is okay. I don't mind. I'm more than happy to do whatever Master wants.
Aren't you nice and obedient?
The drow guard muttered beneath her breath. One of the many doors opened, and the servant returned with something in her hands. Valeria nodded to her, and the girl carefully placed it on the table, where everyone would get a clear view. Waldo leaned forward to stare. It was 2 feet long, stained yellow, and ended in a sharp point.
Is that a tooth?
Valeria nodded.
It is.
She tapped the root, which was perfectly flat.
I file off a bit from time to time to mix in with my potions. It always makes them extremely potent.
Waldo reached out and caressed the yellowed tooth. It was smooth, like polished ivory.
I've seen scales before, but never an actual fang.
Dragons are violent creatures. It is natural that from time to time they lose pieces, teeth, claws, scales, and other bits. They grow back and aren't missed. If you know where to look, you can harvest them.
Waldo sucked in a breath.
You know the location of a lair.
I do, and I will share it with you if your ogre can win the Queen's birthday tournament.
Waldo again held his hand out to her. It's a bargain. Valeria rose smoothly to her feet and placed her palm atop his.
Agreed.
After their guests were escorted out, Valeria went over to her apple tree and plucked a big, juicy red apple. Even after so many years living on the surface, fruits were still a wonder to her. Cherries, grapes, apples, melons, pears, and so many others. How could food taste so sweet? This had to be what sacrifices tasted like to their gods. In the closed world, sweet foods did not exist. Even the exalted of her people still dined on roots, mushrooms, mosses, and the meat of animals, slaves, and other drow. The only real difference between a noble's menu and a squat's was that at least theirs was better prepared, and there was enough of it. If you were a squat in Exen del Yarto, it meant you were always just one step away from starvation. Food and water were hard to come by in the closed world, not like here. Of course, many of the human squats who lived here were also hungry and facing a famine. That people could die of hunger with so much food and water just everywhere proved how incompetent the humans were. If they couldn't even feed themselves surrounded by all this bounty, then they really needed someone to take charge of them. She took a big bite of her apple and chewed slowly, savoring the taste and letting a trickle of juice run down the side of her face. Valeria swallowed and wiped her mouth.
This land is so rich. It's wasted on the humans. We could do so much with it.
Her blademaster nodded.
Too bad there are so many of them. Exalted lady, I don't understand why we must play nice with these weak, pathetic, soft humans. Let me bring in just 300 soldiers and a few spellcasters. I can conquer this city for you in a day.
Valeria nodded.
I know, but how long could you hold it? Do you really believe if we took this place by force, all the neighboring nations would accept it? We would be under siege in a matter of weeks. Our foraging parties would be ambushed. We would have an army 1,000 strong with dozens of mages at our gates. How long could 300 of us hold this place?
Her blademaster frowned.
Not long, she admitted.
Which is why, for now, we rely on diplomacy. There's more than one way to kill a worm.
The blademaster said nothing. Valeria smiled at the short woman.
You disagree?
The exalted lady is wise.
Valeria chuckled and took another bite. That was always a safe answer. Well, she already knew what the other woman thought. She was only a soldier and pledged to her service. It didn't matter if she disagreed so long as she obeyed.
Do you think the ogre can actually do it? Kill Varka?
The blademaster asked as soon as Valeria finished chewing.
Possibly. He is an ogre after all, and he certainly looked healthy.
He sure did,
the other woman said with a slight purr in her voice.
He is also carrying an enchanted blade. I'm sure he is quite deadly with it. He may have a real chance, and if he fails, it costs us nothing of any real value.
If he does it, will you keep your agreement with the White?
Between drow, formal agreements were almost always honored. Breaking one was considered a legitimate reason for killing. Agreements made between drow and the lesser races were optional. Since coming to the city, Valeria had kept most of the promises she'd made. It was necessary to conduct business with the local merchants. Now and then, though, she had broken contracts when it suited her.
Let's wait and see.
She took another bite.
Chapter 11. A Contestant.
Leaving the embassy, Waldo was practically skipping. People on the street and even the guards stared.
Coming here was worth it, Waldo almost sang.
It would have been useful if I could have gotten some new spells, but locating a dragon is a much bigger priority. As soon as Bell wins the tournament and I find out where we have to go, we'll leave. Depending on which direction it is, we can book passage on a river galley or join another caravan. Before exiting the embassy, Waldo had recast an illusion on his ogre, turning Gronk back into Bell. Bell was strolling along in Waldo's wake, while Alice was dragging her feet.
"Darling, aren't you getting a little ahead of yourself?"
Alice asked.
"The tournament hasn't even started, and you're already acting like Bell has won."
"What? Don't you believe in me, sweetie?"
Bell asked.
"It's not that. It's that this tournament might be really dangerous."
Waldo waved that away.
"How dangerous can it be?
Ordinary weapons won't even cut an ogre's skin. But some of the other fighters might have magical weapons, Alice argued. Working at the inn, I heard lots of stories about brave knights slaying monsters with enchanted swords.
I'll be fine, sweetie, Belle patted the top of her head. I got in my share of fights before I met Master. I can handle myself.
Even if you think that, there's something else that worries me.
Alice turned to Waldo.
As badly as you want to find a dragon, Valeria could have asked you for anything, right?
Yes, that's true.
Then why ask to have Belle win some tournament? What's in it for her? I mean, she believes you're a white mage. Why not ask for something only a white mage could give her? Why not ask you to kill a lord or steal a sacred treasure? Why is winning this tournament worth trading what you want so badly?
I don't know, and I don't care, Waldo said.
What's important is that it matters to her. We get Belle in the tournament, she wins the tournament. I get my map where X marks the dragon's lair, and I am one long step closer to completing my quest and going home. With any luck, one of the other contestants will be a knight. That'll count as one of the conditions of my quest fulfilled. It's simple and straightforward.
What could possibly go wrong?
Alice drew a circle over her head to ward off evil.
I have no idea, but whenever you say something like that, something usually does.
He gave her a confident smile.
Don't worry. The dark powers are finally smiling on me. Nothing can stop me now.
She drew another circle over her heart. The arena was a massive amphitheater that towered over everything near it. The exterior was four levels of arches, with statues depicting warriors, monsters, and beasts displayed within each archway. Inside was enough room to seat 60,000. It was the largest gathering place in all the world. In sheer size, it was a match for Castle Corpse Lover and the other great castles of Alter. With its mass and beautifully carved arches and statues, Waldo would grudgingly admit that unlike the Gold Wall or the imaginary guild hall, this at least was impressive. So, of course, the local mages had slapped illusions on it. The entire exterior of the arena was red. Not blood red, not brick red, not fire red, but all of them, and every shade in between. As you looked on, the stone darkened and then lightened, as though the building were going through bouts of embarrassment or anger. Also, there were two white stallions chasing one another round and round the top. Waldo found himself scratching his arm as they approached. Adjoining the arena on one side was a domed building trimmed in gold. Standing outside was an energetic young man promising anyone who would listen that they could make a fortune inside. The man hesitated when he saw a white mage walking up to him.
"Oh, I'm terribly sorry, sir, but I'm afraid mages are barred from playing in the gaming houses."
Waldo could understand why. Certain basic spells would let you rig any number of games. He would have to remember that for the future. "Is this where you can register a contestant for the Queen's tournament?" The man's eyes widened.
"It is. Just ask for Fornette."
Waldo gave a brisk nod and went inside. Hanging down from the dome was a massive sign with foot-tall letters painted in gold. It was the first thing anyone coming in would notice. Its message was simple. "We honor all bets." Within the building, there were tables where men gathered about to play all sorts of games. Dice, cards, and cups were all to be seen. At a couple tables were massive wheels with sections painted red, gold, silver, and green, and each slice was given a number. When a man in a gold and red costume spun the wheel, all the people gathered began screaming out a number or color. One section of the floor had been dug up and a miniature fighting pit created. Two dogs were inside, attacking one another as spectators cheered. Women in low-cut and revealing dresses circulated through the room with trays of food and drink. The air was heavy with pipe smoke, alcohol, and sweat. The crowd was loud and raucous and focused on the different games. To the rear of the room was a large cage with thick iron bars. Six guards stood watch over it. In front of the cage were three separate tables. Each had one man seated with a ledger, inkwell, wooden pen, stacks of parchment, a scale, weights, a lit candle, sealing wax, and stamps. Behind each table was another pair of royal guards. Nailed up on the back wall of the cage was a blackboard with 22 names neatly written down with numbers following. Queen Mattis, Birthday Celebration Tournament. Odds. Varka, 1-100. Sir Hector of Falmouth, 40-1. Sir Varnon of Lion's Den, 50-1. Sir Draymore of Pinellas, 50-1. All the other names had 100-1 written after them. Waldo was not inside for longer than a minute before a rail-thin man dressed in a gold shirt and crimson trousers hurried up to him.
"Welcome to the Arena Gaming House, Master," the man said with a hasty bow. "I am Fournette, the manager. I sincerely hope you have not come here to cause trouble."
"Trouble?" Waldo asked.
"Last week, the ambassador stood outside and spent the entire day shouting that the games are murder and a sin."
The man ran a finger along his collar.
"If you intend to do that inside, I will have to ask you to leave. If you are going to scream abuse at us, it will have to be from the street."
"I see Melissa is as popular here as with the drow," Waldo thought. "No, I'm not here for that. I'm just here to enter my servant into the tournament."
"The tournament?"
Fournette replied blankly. "The Queen's birthday tournament?" Waldo pointed up at the blackboard. "That one." The man simply stood there a moment, staring at Waldo. "Is there something wrong?" Waldo finally asked.
"Master, could we perhaps speak in private?"
They were soon in Fournette's cramped office. Shelves covered all four walls and went from floor to ceiling. Every shelf was loaded down with books. On the floor were still more of them, along with baskets filled to overflowing with paper. There was barely enough room left for a desk and a single chair. The room smelled of musty paper and ink. Fournette sat behind his desk and Waldo was in the chair. Alice and Belle were standing shoulder to shoulder just behind. Fournette's hands were on his desk, twisting about.
"Your request is very surprising, to say the least, Master..."
"Waldo Rabbit, of Avalon." He nodded to his companions. "This is my wife, Alice Rabbit, and my servant, Belle of Tarsus. She is the one who will be fighting."
Yes.
Fournette squirmed about in his seat.
"Are you absolutely certain you want to do that, Master Rabbit?"
"Yes."
"You are aware all the matches are to the death, without exception?"
"I've heard that."
"Are you really certain you want to put your servant in such a dangerous situation?"
"Thanks for the concern, sweetie, but I'm tougher than I look. I'll scratch their eyes out."
Belle pawed the air. "Roar." Fournette chewed his bottom lip as both hands rapidly slapped his desk. "Is there a problem?" Waldo asked.
"It's just this is rather unique."
"What, never had a girl fight before?"
Belle asked.
"As a matter of fact, we have, though the last was more than 30 years ago. What I'm referring to is the fact a white mage is sponsoring you. Given Mistress Cornwall's behavior, I was under the impression all white mages were against the games."
"We are, but I'm an exception. My servant is eager for a little bloodshed, and I figured this way everyone could enjoy it."
"Do we get to eat the people we kill?"
Belle asked, sounding quite serious.
What?
Fournette choked out.
"Doesn't have to be all of them, maybe just an arm, from each?"
Alice dug an elbow into Belle's side.
"She's joking. Nomads from the plains have a strange sense of humor."
Fournette gave an uncomfortable nod. "If her gender is not the issue, what is?" Waldo asked.
"Well, the fact you are sponsoring her. Given Avalon's attitudes, it is rather jarring to have a white mage come here and say he wants one of his people to participate."
Waldo shrugged. "For all things, there's a first time." Fournette hesitated.
"It's just, we wouldn't want to offend you if she were to be killed. I'm sure she's a fine warrior, but we have knights and veteran mercenaries competing as well. The champion's prize is 500 gold marks. Even with the risks, many men are willing to take the chance."
"That's wonderful," Waldo exclaimed.
"It is?"
"Of course. When she wins, I'll have 500 more gold coins."
"But, well... Varka has been our gladiatorial champion for the past 6 years. He is the favorite to win again this year, too. A heavy favorite."
Waldo recalled seeing that name at the top of the blackboard with 1-100 next to it. He didn't give it a second thought. Even if this Varka was a great fighter, Waldo would still favor a great monster in any 1-1 match.
"Darling," Alice spoke up,
Maybe this isn't...
I understand, Waldo said, and I am willing to take a risk. If Bell should fall, I will not blame you or anyone else. Fournette wrung his hands together.
Is there another problem?
Waldo asked with a hint of annoyance. The man took a deep breath and slowly shook his head.
No, Master Abbott. If you are certain, I will register her. I only ask you to remember your pledge should she fall.
He opened the book sitting on his desk and dipped a pen in the inkwell. He handed the pen to Bell, who then turned the book around.
Put your mark right here.
Bell put an X on the spot he pointed to.
You are now registered as a contestant in the Queen's Birthday Celebration Tournament.
Fournette stood up and bowed across his desk.
On behalf of Her Majesty, the Mage Guild of Torikai, and myself, I honor your courage, Bell of Tarsis. I wish you glory and the favor of all the gods. You must return to this building by an hour before noon, 6 days from now. Should you fall, you shall be given a funeral pyre or burial at state expense. Do you have a preference?
Following the registration, a man went up a ladder and added a name to the blackboard. Bell of Tarsis, 100-1. Waldo turned to Alice. How much gold do we have? She slapped both hands protectively to the purse she carried.
Why? How much?
27 coins total. Alice didn't need to count them. She always kept a careful track of how much they had.
Good. Let's bet all of it on Bell to win the tournament.
All of it? She gasped.
How are we going to pay for food or rooms?
We'll only bet the gold. The silver and copper we have should be plenty.
But 27 gold coins is a fortune. What if Bell loses?
Oh, you don't have any faith in me.
Bell pouted.
Oh, you know I do. But there's still a risk.
If Bell loses, then I lose her. And she is worth far more than 27 gold coins to me, Waldo said.
Thank you, Master. A girl likes to be appreciated.
If she wins, though, those 27 coins will become 2,700. Along with a prize, that will be 3,200 gold coins. All our money problems will be solved. I can buy a castle if I want, or a fleet of war galleys. And when I return home, my mother will be proud of me.
3,200 pieces of gold, she whispered. I can't even imagine that much money.
She frowned.
But it's still all the gold we have.
If Bell loses, we won't care about the gold, Waldo said. And when she wins, 27 will be nothing. You can give that away to the poor if you want.
Really?
Waldo thought about it. He pictured giving the dirty mundanes he'd seen actual gold.
No, not really. But you can throw away all the copper we have.
Alice nodded and untied the purse. A man at one of the tables balanced the coins against lead weights. When he was satisfied, he recorded the wager in his ledger. He then wrote the name of the fighter, the amount wagered, the odds, and the volume and page number where the wager had been recorded. He then melted a bit of wax over the candle flame on his table. He poured the gold-colored wax onto the parchment and pressed the Mage's Guild seal into it. The clerk handed the paper to him.
Should your fighter win the tournament, you must present your ticket here to claim your winnings. Winnings will not be paid out without possession of the ticket. The guild is not responsible if your ticket is lost or destroyed.
Waldo folded it up and slid it into one of the many pockets of his robe.
Well, this has been a productive day. Let's get some dinner and find an inn.
Fournette stood outside his office and watched them leave. One of his employers came up to him.
Was that smart, sir?
No, probably not, Fournette admitted. But the instructions from the guild are clear. They want as many people in the tournament as they can get. They can't blame me for this.
Do you think the barbarian woman has a chance?
Fournette sneered.
Against Varka? Don't be stupid. Now get back to work.
Chapter 12. Appearances can be deceiving.
5 silver coins per night? It's outrageous, Alice complained.
I'm sure if you'd used your charm, you could have gotten a significant discount, Waldo told her. They'd gotten a single room at the Silver Harp Inn. It was spacious enough and had 2 sturdy beds. It was certainly nicer than anywhere they'd stayed in before. Alice crossed her arms over her chest.
You know I don't like doing that to people.
Then don't complain about the prices. The other 2 inns we checked weren't any cheaper. It seemed most of them were already occupied. A lot of people are here for the celebration.
We could stay at one of the places outside the wall, Alice suggested. I bet they're a lot more reasonable.
And more dangerous, Waldo said. Even if the Gold City makes me itch, it's still safer than the Rat's Nest.
We've stayed in worse places. Remember Pig Slaughter Junction?
I like that place, Belle said. They had all you could eat pig's feet for just 2 coppers.
That was because the inn was right next to a slaughterhouse, Alice reminded.
I remember, Belle sighed.
It was scenic and had a great aroma.
We are not staying in the Rat's Nest for the next 6 days, Waldo said. We'll stay here and pay the higher prices. It's worth it for the extra safety.
Darling, it's perfectly safe for us. You have me and Belle to protect you, not to mention people there love you.
I know. A slight shudder ran through him. That's one more reason to stay here. Alice was obviously going to continue arguing when Waldo held up a hand.
What?
Alice asked. Someone who can use magic is coming. Waldo placed a hand on his wand, but kept it in his pocket. Alice and Belle both moved to stand near the door. There was a single sharp rap. Belle glanced over her shoulder. Waldo nodded. When she opened it, there was a figure in white robes standing there, looking furious. Waldo took his wand out and pointed at her.
Please tell me you're not here to confess your love again.
Melissa stormed into the room without invitation. She pointed to Belle and then to Alice.
You and you, out! I want to speak to Waldo alone.
We don't take orders from you, sweetie.
Why do you want to be alone with him? Alice demanded. I've more important matters to discuss, matters that do not involve a beast or a barmaid.
How did you know where I was staying? Waldo asked. I only arrived here a couple hours ago.
The Order has many friends in many places.
Spies, you mean? Waldo grunted.
Friends, Melissa insisted.
And I suppose these friends of yours have been following me?
That's right. I know what you've been up to, and I mean to discuss it with you.
Well, that sounds like a conversation I'm eager to have, he nodded to Belle. Shut the door.
Belle did so.
I would prefer to discuss this alone with you, Melissa told him.
I'm sure you would.
If I truly meant to harm you, do you think they could stop me?
Belle cracked her knuckles.
Depends. Would ripping you in half do it?
Melissa scowled at the disguised ogre.
I've dealt with your sort before. My spells cut deeper than steel.
Well, I've eaten a few of your sort. You taste just like everyone else.
Melissa turned to Waldo.
How can you stand to travel with a creature that eats human flesh?
It helps with the food bill. Waldo hadn't lowered his wand.
What do you want? What I have to say to you is important. Do you really want to have this conversation in front of your ogre and barmaid? Do you trust them?
I trust them both with my life. For a dark mage, that was a very odd thing to say, since trust involved daggers and hearts and all that. But it was true. Through the bond, he could sense pleasure from both of them. If Kleptus were here, Waldo would have sent him away as fast as he could. Melissa took a deep, slow breath.
Fine. Why in the name of everything holy and sacred did you go and visit the drow?
Yes. You would have an issue with that, wouldn't you?
The drow are among the most savage, vile, wicked, immoral, ruthless, cruel, and dangerous creatures ever to be spat out from the bowels of the earth.
He nodded. Yes, they are impressive.
Do you have any idea how hard I've worked to try and convince the queen to expel them? How hard every ambassador before me has worked at it?
Their presence here is nothing but a scouting expedition. The treaty Madis signed with them limits their embassy to just 6 individuals. But they are already plotting and scheming to get her to adjust the treaty and allow more of them to come. If they aren't driven out, there will be a horde of black-skinned, red-eyed savages murdering and burning everything in sight.
Given what I've seen of this place, that might improve things. She glared at him.
Is this all just one huge joke to you?
Believe me, if this were a joke, I wouldn't be pointing my wand at you.
From the moment I met you, I knew you were a criminal and capable of some horrific choices.
She sent Belle a quick glance.
And while I despise thieves, I can at least understand selfishness and doing things solely for your own benefit. It is a sad and pathetic existence, but I can understand it.
But what possible reason could you have for meeting with a drow?
My reasons are strange and enigmatic. Her eyebrows leapt.
Are you trying to sound like a white mage? Don't. If you hadn't already made such a public